Welcome to Funnel Hacker Radio Podcast, where we go behind the scenes and uncover the tactics and strategies top entrepreneurs are using to make more sales, dominate their markets, and how you can get those same results. Here is your host, Dave Woodward.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Funnel Hacker Radio. I'm your host, Dave Woodward. Today, you guys are in for a massive, massive treat. I have some dude who's up in the middle of New York, basically freezing his butt off, has no idea why his heater's not working, couldn't get his computer started this morning to get Skype up and running. But this guy is crushing it. He is the master, the genius, the one and only Ezra Firestone. Welcome, bud.
Ladies and gentlemen, wow, a heck of an introduction. All true. All true. tech failures. I'm frozen over here. I'm wearing what's known as a poncho. I don't know if you can see it. This is probably not going to have a video, but that's a legit poncho, which is actually basically like you shear a sheep and then you just put it on your back. It's basically what you do, right? So I'm like wearing a sheep. I'm cold. I got my wife's hat on. It's a rough morning, Dave Woodward. But I'm excited to be here because, you know, I have a lot of respect and admiration for what you guys are doing. And, you know, obviously we've had a chance to hang out at Pirate's Cove and some other times, you know, I just really like you guys and what you're up to and, excited to be on your show.
Oh, Ezra, if you guys are, I mean, everyone, I can't imagine you don't know who Ezra is, but my gosh, he is a dear friend of mine personally, and obviously of ours, ClickFunnels. He's crushing it on Shopify and he's got his own products bar, Zipify over there. Smartmarketer.com is his primary site. Definitely follow him there. He's got his own podcast. I mean, if you want to know anything about e-commerce, Ezra is the man, the myth, the legend. I'm so privileged to have you on the show. Yeah, we've been trying to get you on forever. We ran into each other at Ryan Moran's event last week. It was like, dude, let's just get our phones, let's calendar this thing.
I mean, it took us meeting in person and literally pulling out our calendars and saying, like, let the two, because we were trying to schedule it with the teams. It was like, no, let's just do this together as men, all right? We're going to come together as men, and we're going to schedule an appointment. And it was a big deal for us, actually. It was like the first appointment that I've scheduled in a while for myself, and I was proud of it, actually.
Well, offline, we were starting to talk about – that's why I wanted to stop our conversation because, I mean, anytime you're with Ezra, he's dropping value bombs all day long. And we started, and I'm like, I want to capture all this. So real quick, just understand, I mean, Ezra did about $30 million last year, but one of the great things he's doing is – the whole idea as far as e-commerce, and this is things we get asked about all the time. I really want to dive into this with you, Ezra. And that is, you know, what's the right price point of products to sell? How do you know when you're in the right market? And you started going like crazy. So I'm just going to just dive in where we were before. Yeah. You were talking as far as premium products and niches and genders and all that stuff.
For sure. My viewpoint is that it's less about price point and more about multiple. And when I see people who try to run businesses like we run, Dave, which is what we're up to. We're not these big guys with $300 million in VC funding. We, you know, we're not these people. We're scrappy, do-it-yourself entrepreneurs who are out there in the trenches running our businesses and attempting to be profitable. And we are using, on my side and on your side, paid amplification as the means to fuel the business, as sort of the energy that drives everything. And so if you subscribe to this notion that like your business is going to be really built on the backbone of paid visibility, meaning you're going out to Facebook and you're going out to YouTube and you're going out to the Google Display Network and you're going out to Pinterest and Instagram and you're saying, I want to pay to get my messaging in front of this group of people that I think I can sell a product to, right? So like that is like baseline what I do in business at the most fundamental level. So if you're approaching business that way, which – and then obviously, look, there's story-based content and there's all this other stuff, but like – and we'll get to that. But it really starts with the willingness to go out there and buy visibility for your offer. So if you're doing that, where most people fail is they mess up the multiple. So my viewpoint is that the absolute minimum – and it gets – you get more space as you get more towards a premium product level, as I'll explain. But the absolute minimum multiple you can have is buy for one and sell for three. And ideally, you're buying for one and selling for four or five. So here's what that means. If I buy a makeup stick for $6, the minimum I can sell it for is 18 if I want to be profitable. And ideally, I'm selling it for 24 or 30, right? Ideally, I have a buy for one, i.e. buy for six and sell for four, which is buy for six, sell for 24, right? Now, that sort of brings me to my conversation of premium, right? Because you look at me and I'm selling $28 cosmetic sticks, okay? That's my baseline front-end product. But my average order value is not $27, it's $80. So how am I doing that, right? I'm bundling them together and pushing people towards a bundle. And if you look at the bundle, now look at this multiple. You buy three of them for 76. Those three cost me, let's say, 30. So I'm now under a three multiple, but because I'm at a higher price point, the multiple can be lower because on that 76, I still have $46 in profit, which means I can go out there and spend $46 to acquire a sale. And the cool thing about this, and we're going to dive further into these numbers so people understand, is if you're able to do that, after 6 months, you have what's called repeat business. So now you can go out and spend $65, even though you're only making $45 because you have a bunch of repeat business fueling your ads, if that makes sense. So real quick tangent to how I got to eight figures, and then we'll go back to this numbers game and what I was talking to you about gender and market and niche and things like that. Quick tangent that sort of expounds on this idea of repeat business being a very important thing when it comes to direct response e-commerce and how that allows you to actually go out and potentially buy sales at a loss but still be profitable and grow your business. And people are thinking, oh, well, Ezra, I don't want to go out there and buy sales at self-liquidating or break even or even at a loss. But let me explain to you what happened to me, which is my direct response e-commerce business, which is a direct-to-consumer physical product cosmetic business that I am using paid amplification as the sole means to promote. I'm not on Amazon. I'm not in retail stores. I don't have joint venture partners. I'm not using influencers. I'm straight up using Facebook and Google. And I'm doing 20 million in that one brand, and I'm doing 30 million overall across other businesses as well. So what I was stuck at around $7 million a year. And look, we all say what you want about lifestyle over business and whether you're working too much, whatever you want to say about that. And I have very strong viewpoints on that is at the end of the day, you're in this game to grow your business. You want to grow your business, right? Or you wouldn't be listening to Funnel Hacker Radio. So I was stuck at this plateau of $7 million a year for a couple of years, and I could not figure out why I couldn't get past it. And one of the things that I'm known for, I'm like, I got this name called the growth guy in these private equity and venture capital firms, because right now, people with billions of dollars, they're investing that money into online commerce businesses. Businesses that are built on ClickFunnels, businesses that are built on Amazon, businesses that are built on Shopify. That's where big money is going, because these people with real money see that this is the future, right? So they're looking to buy companies. And these funds, these venture capital and private equity funds who might have $700 million in a fund or $1 billion in a fund where they're doing investment, they're purchasing companies with the hopes of growing them and flipping them, or purchasing companies with the hopes of rolling them all up and reselling them, right? So when they're vetting deals, they will come to me and say, here's a $50 million or $100 million or $300 million or even billion, I've done a $1 billion one, company that is predominantly direct-to-consumer online-based. Will you vet the analytics, vet the ad campaigns, look at the lifecycle customer marketing, and tell us, number one, would you buy this thing? And number two, how would you grow it? So I'm essentially doing these growth plans for these multi-$100 million companies. And what's fascinating about that, Dave, is as a person who's only, like, I at this time, when this started a couple years ago, I was only ever a multi-$1 million e-commerce business owner, but I'm real scrappy and I'm real good at data analysis. And, you know, I came from nothing, bootstrapped. I grew up poor. You know what I mean? I grew up like with nothing. I came from, you know, just like anyone else. Like I didn't even realize, it's another conversation of going from being like identifying as poor to now being one of the richer people that I know. And that's been an interesting transition of, you know, you think rich people are bad, but you don't even know you do think that. It's a prejudice that you have that you don't know you have until you become rich. Whole thing. We could talk about that. But back to this conversation is, I'd never grown a multi-hundred, even an eight-figure retailer. Now I have an eight-figure retailer, but I hadn't before. And looking at their data, I noticed something across all of them. I did maybe 13 of these audits over 2 years, and I'm still doing them now, which is kind of, it's fun. But I noticed, I was like, wow, like these companies look at marketing completely different than the way I look at marketing. And maybe that's why I can't grow and they are growing. And so here's was the difference of how they looked at it. And this one difference in how I looked at my business is what allowed me to go from 7 million to 20 million in 1 year. Boom. As soon as I changed my viewpoint on this, it was literally one fundamental shift in how I was looking at the numbers that allowed me to triple the business in a year and now continue to grow. So here's what it was. The way that I looked at businesses was, I got no cash. I'm living off my wife's yoga earnings. I'm no joke. This needs to work. I need to be profitable. Like, I can't mess around. She's going to be upset if I go bankrupt on us, you know, and I got to go get another job. Like, you know, I'm 22. This ain't working, you know, I'm not 22 now, but, so the way I looked at it was, if an ad campaign is running and it's not profitable, you turn that thing off immediately, right? You look at Google AdWords and you got 6 keywords in there. This is old school. And 2 of those keywords don't work. Turn them off. You're running Facebook. It's not profitable. Turn it off. Now, here's what I noticed about all these retailers is they all had one channel that I call the subsidy channel that was subsidizing the rest of their marketing. So it was either email or organic traffic or Google AdWords. Those were the top three. It was either email, organic traffic, or Google AdWords. And then Facebook would be the fourth one, or maybe Amazon. It was one of those channels. It was one of those 5 channels where that one channel of visibility was uber profitable, just crushing, right? And as you go in business year over year, and this is what I call the halo effect, people don't understand this. This is why Smart Marketer is growing, Zipify is growing, Boom is growing. So I have this halo effect of I've been in business 3 years. I have all these past customers who are repeating, who are coming back organically, who are coming back through emails, that gives me a baseline of profit that I can spend on amplification to grow my business, if that makes sense. So what they were doing was they take their email revenue and then they go out to Facebook, they go out to Pinterest, they go out to Instagram, they go out to YouTube, and they lose major money buying customers, right? They lose money on all these other channels, but all these channels are being subsidized by one profitable channel. They're out there losing money, but they're acquiring customers. And then come the holiday time or come their next sale, they have a much bigger pool of people to run that sale event to, and they end up making way more money during that sale event because they have such a bigger pool because they were out there growing that pool over time, even at a loss, and they end up with a much bigger company. So they take a longer trajectory. They're like, listen, we've got one channel that makes $100,000 a month in profit. Let's spend $95,000 of that $100,000 a month in acquiring customers at whatever cost, as smartly as we can, as effectively as we can. You know, some of them will be break even, some will be at a loss, but let's go out there and use that money that we have baseline to grow, because just growing the operation over time grows the operation, if that makes sense. Are you with me?
No, totally.
This is how I went from 7 to 8 figures, is changing my viewpoint on that. Instead of turning off ad campaigns that didn't perform, I looked at my organic traffic, my email traffic, and the ad campaigns that were performing as a subsidy to support the growth on channels that weren't performing, which allowed me the freedom and flexibility to figure out how to get those channels to perform. That's the thing that you don't understand, is that most people understand, is that like you need some level of resource to figure out how to get a channel to work. And if you're not investing in it, you're never going to figure it out. And so it all kind of works together. And this is why businesses that have been around 3 or 4 years have such a market preference. Like advantage over businesses that haven't been around, because they have some form of halo that they can invest in direct amplification. And the big issue with business owners, Dave, that I see in our industry, is they pull all their money out of their business. They don't reinvest in the snowball. They're afraid to lose money on paid amplification because they think they're losing money. They don't understand that they're actually investing in the growth of the snowball that 18 months from now is going to be a giant snowball, right? So it's a fundamental shift in how you look at growing your company from a paid amplification perspective. And if you have one channel, and a lot of people in my industry have Amazon that's real profitable for them, and I advocate for using that profit to go out and buy sales via direct response, even if you're losing money, because overall you're going to grow the company. And it's kind of just a different way of looking at it. And ultimately now we're way more profitable than we ever were, and we're way bigger, but it's because we changed our viewpoint on how we look at ads and numbers.
I love it. I think that's the part, you know, a lot of us, when we first got started, it was literally just to pay the bills. And then it was, man, I've got a lifestyle here and I'm sucking all the cash out of it. And you're like, you're sitting there freezing. I think, you know, you got to build your business for winter. And that is, you're in a situation where things aren't always going to be as great as they are right now. Everything cycles. And I think especially in the e-com platform, if you can be taking that and really investing, and I think what I loved about what you're saying there, Ezra, is use that to learn these other platforms, because every single platform is so totally unique and different.
100%.
And I think it's just, I love the term as far as paid amplification. That's super, super cool.
And you guys do that really well at ClickFunnels. I mean, I see your videos all the time on every channel. You know, you're on Instagram, you're on Instagram stories, you're on YouTube, you're on Facebook. I mean, you guys really get paid amplification of story-based content that engages the consumer over time, that when you have a sales cycle, like you got a new book coming out or you got a new whatever coming out, like all these people that are in your community have been seeing you over the course of the last couple months because you're adding value through content, which is my second strategy, which is once you have a community, you take 10% or 20% of your total ad budget and you invest it in literally just amplifying value add content to that community. And we started doing this. We started seeing our sale campaigns that we run every month and a half go up by about 500%, because all these people were now engaged with us on a weekly basis, seeing content that was just value add content, not designed to sell anything, that when we did decide to sell something, worked way better because they were engaged with us. Now, back to the how to pick a market and what kind of multiple you need. So I think, again, my preference is towards mass market products, meaning I want to be able to pick an age range. I literally, if you look at Boom, which is 20 million, I'm like, women over 50 in America. That is, by the way, who I also advertise to. I don't put any targeting on there. I'm literally running my ads. I'm spending 20 grand a day on Facebook to an audience called women over 50. That's it. Because Facebook is now pretty smart, and you don't need necessarily to put targetings in there if you have a mass market audience. Now, that's not relevant for most people, so you can ignore that piece of advice. But I lean now towards mass market, and I want to be able to say, this product offer is literally relevant towards anyone who is this gender in this age range. That's my ideal, right? And then you niche down from there. All right, I want men who are 25 to 35 who are outdoorsmen, right? Who are interested in hunting, hiking, fishing, whatever. Okay, great. Like, you can niche down from there, but I prefer as mass market as possible at this stage of the game. Now, granted, I've been doing this for 12 years, so that is like why I'm willing to go that wide, because when you go that wide, you really need a compelling offer, a compelling product, a compelling story. You have to really understand marketing, or you can't go that wide, right? You can only go that wide if you really are confident in your ability to engage that audience in a story that relates to a problem they're having in their life, and then your product is a solution to that problem. So I tend towards that, and I also tend towards premium, because you'll notice my average order value is 80. I've got about a 3 multiple on that. And I can do that at a premium level, whereas if I'm selling a $25 or $35 product, I need a 5 or 6 multiple to make the ads work. Does that make sense? So minimum multiple is 3. Minimum. You got to be buying for 1 and selling for 3. Buying for 10, selling for 30 at a minimum if you want this to work. And you're going to have a much better chance of making direct response e-commerce work if you can get your average order value up over $50. Meaning I actually, what I was telling you before, look at premium as 85 and above. I think that's where you hit premium for me in my eyes of it, but people would argue with me on this. So I always try to lean towards a premium level product, which is 85 and above, because at the end of the day, if you're going out there, you're paying for visibility, you're engaging someone with a video that starts telling them a story that then, you know, relates to a problem they're having that alludes to a solution, which is your product. Like, you might as well try to sell them an expensive product rather than a cheap product. But a lot of people are doing dropship, a lot of people are doing $25, $35 widgets, $15 credit card knives, whatever. If you're doing those lower ticket items, which is great, impulse buys are great. Impulse buys, the other beautiful thing, one thing we need to talk about with e-commerce is the more expensive, the longer the sales cycle. Let me explain that. So if you have a product that's 30 bucks or 15 bucks or 20 bucks, you can literally go video, and I'll give you a perfect example of this, problem solution video, meaning there's a video of a guy sitting in his car or a gal sitting in her car, and she drops her phone between the seat and she can't reach it and it's stuck. And then, boom, transition, that's the before. After, in the same video, 30-second video on Facebook, person drops their phone, but now there's a leather sleeve in between the seat, and they reach down and they pull it out. This might even be one of your guys' products. Now that little leather sleeve, that problem solution video that says this product is going to solve this problem that you have that you can identify with. You can identify with this pain point we're showing you, and here's a solution to it that links directly to a landing page, long-form ClickFunnels style landing page with a video on it and whatnot, product imagery, some sales copy, headlines, subheadlines, whatever you want, with an upsell or order bump or cart bump, whatever you guys do. But that model, that's a short sales cycle, right? That's like problem solution video to sales page. That works for impulse buy products. That works for lower price products. The more expensive your product, the longer you have to hold someone in a sales cycle, because the more trust it takes to get someone to buy something for 90 bucks, which means longer video on Facebook. My top line awareness videos are like 7 minutes long. They're not a minute long, right? More steps, like perhaps an article that, you know, pre-sale engagement article or advertorial that then leads to the sales page, more retargeting, like retargeting people who watched the video and didn't click to the article, retargeting people who clicked to the article but not the product page, retargeting people who made it to the product page but not the cart. So your sales cycle is much longer for a premium level product, but I still advocate and lean in that direction, because it's a lot easier to make the numbers work when you have premium level and you got enough profit to really go out there and advertise. So if you're selling a $30 average order value product, boy, I don't want to be buying that product for more than $5 or $6. I'm going to need that 26 to spend on ads. It's hard to get a credit card submit for under 20 bucks. Legit, yeah. In this day and age, you're trying to get a credit card submit. You're trying to get someone to pull out their thing, pull their credit card out and submit it. And boy, if you can do that for under 20 bucks these days, You got a real hot product. You're solving a real nice problem, and it's an impulse buy. That's going to make up who's going to do that. Now, if you don't have the super hot product and the impulse buy and the low price point, it's going to cost you more. Now, when I first got in the game, I was getting credit card submits for $6, right? But that was a long time ago now. So my point being, I lean towards a premium product. I lean towards a minimum of a 5x. If I'm going into a market, Dave, and I'm saying I'm going to run direct response front-end e-commerce on this, which I'm building a new business right now, another cosmetics business geared towards the younger demographic rather than the older demographic, I want a 5x. I want to buy my stick for 7 and sell it for 35. You know what I mean? Just to give me the space, the freedom, the flexibility, the ease to figure it out. And I'm going to try to bundle those. I'm going to try to get people to buy 3 at a time and all that kind of thing. So I'm going to be working on my average order value, upsell, cross-sell, order bumps, all that to give me that multiple. So I lean towards premium. I lean towards a buy for 1, sell for 5. I lean towards mass market. And I don't think that's for everyone. I think you could totally lean in towards impulse buy. You could lean in towards niche specific. But like, Dave, I'm trying to build multi-$100 million companies. I'm trying to build multi-$100 million direct-to-consumer physical product companies that are grown on the backbone of paid amplification, which, look, for me, the reason I'm doing that is because I'm not going to come out and say that this is a better business model than someone else's idea of what a good business model is. I'm not prepared to say that. But what I am prepared to say is that for who I am in the world and what I enjoy doing and the lifestyle that I want, I have 70 employees. They're all virtual. My businesses are pretty straightforward. It's like advertising, content, and then customer support. You know, it's like it's a simple model. It's easy to systematize. It's scalable, infinitely scalable if you hit the right sort of – if you hit the right point of content to market match where it really resonates with someone's pain point and the product offering is good and you have a real product that adds value. I mean, I just find the model. Now, granted, I'm 100% biased because I've been in direct to consumer physical products for my whole entire adult life since I was 18. And like, this is all I know and what I've done. But boy, I haven't found a model that I like better. And I have to tell you, as someone who just like you sells information, I sell courses on how I do this. And I have an event once a year on how I do this. And I have a mastermind for very successful sellers. And I have software as a service businesses, right? So I have other businesses that aren't as big. They are harder to run, more work. And I still love them and I would never give them up. And I'm really enjoying them, but they're not as easy to scale and systematize as direct-to-consumer physical products, and they're also not based on my personality. Sorry, direct-to-consumer physical products isn't based on Ezra Firestone, whereas the other businesses kind of are really relying on me as a public figure. And I really like the idea of a brand that's not built on the backbone of a public figure, even though one of my main e-commerce brands has a public figure at the helm. I'm not saying don't have people who endorse your brand, influencers, and things like that, but that's why I lean those directions.
Fantastic. Ezra, I think the coolest thing is, I mean, you're just such a total magician at this kind of stuff that you just talk only because it's literally part of your DNA. I mean, you've been doing this for so long. But I think the cool thing is you've paid the price. And I think that's the part people don't understand is you got to go out there and you got to get your nose bloody. You got to be able to go out and too many people get in this failures. Game as a short-term thing. And it's a long-term game. I love the fact you're building multiple $100 million companies. Well, that's
I haven't done it yet, but I'm working on it, right? One of my companies right now is probably valued at around $50 million. One of my other companies is probably valued around 10. So I haven't really reached the 9-figure mark yet. But I do agree with you that I think that a lot of people are short-sighted and they don't understand that this is a marathon and not a sprint. And you and I haven't been in the industry as long as we have. I've seen a lot of people fall off a lot. And by the way, one of the things I really respect and love about you guys is that you have been around. Like Russell was doing microcontinuity in 07 or something. You know what I mean? Like I remember potato guns. I remember him from then, you know, like I was around back then. And he and I have seen a lot of people fall off. And what happens is people are burning the candle at both ends. They're not paying attention to cash flow. They are short-sighted and are just trying to make cash or not trying to build something consistently and scalable over time. And like what I'm trying to do is plant seeds, water those seeds every month for 4 years, grow a mango tree that then feeds my family for generations. I don't want to just go out and spear a bunch of fish one day, right? Like I really want a sustainable, consistent, ongoing business. And I do think that like you're going to have failures. Like I've had more things have failed than have worked, for sure, 100%. I've nearly bankrupted myself a couple times. Like, you're gonna, you know, I've been short on taxes when I needed taxes at the end of the year because I mismanaged cash flow. Like, I've had all those experiences, and that's par for the course as you learn how to deal with money, as you learn how to manage big sums of money, as you learn how to, you know, it's like you're gonna have these setbacks, but you can get smarter. You cannot find yourself without having paid your quarterly estimates in 2011 when you should have, you know, like, or whatever, you know. It's a while back now for me, but like, this is where people, you know, they run into issues, is they're not looking at their numbers. They're not looking at the cash flow. They are not paying their taxes on a regular basis. They're, you know, yeah, I hear you. There's going to be some failures.
Well, I love, absolutely love everything that you do, primarily because you're such an advocate of just diving in and just immersing yourself in it. You just go
build
all
your funnel.
In.
Yeah. Do it yourself. Get in there. Figure out the product you're going to retail. Figure out its unique selling propositions. Get into ClickFunnels. Build out that page yourself. Have someone help you do a video for it. Have someone help you do a video ad. Learn Facebook advertising from guys like you guys, Russell, you know, ClickFunnels, me. Get in there and, you know, like, it's hard to delegate and outsource and scale something that you don't intuitively really understand yourself. Like, now I'm at a point where I can have a whole team running this process. But like, if I hadn't done it all, I wouldn't be able to do that. I wouldn't really know what was working. I wouldn't know what to look at. So I'm a big fan of the do-it-yourself entrepreneur. I'm a big fan of like really getting like, I think if there's one place to get nitty gritty, it's marketing process. Because marketing process, you know, someone else can get nitty gritty on product. Someone else can get nitty gritty on support. Someone else can get nitty gritty on, you know, finance and bookkeeping. But like, boy, if you pick one area to put your attention, like, I'm a big fan of it being marketing process because it's like it is the thing that drives everything else.
We joke around about that all the time here at the office. It's the one thing you don't want to outsource your lovemaking. And I think that's the key here is it's what matters. Sorry for the visual there, but
it's a good way to put it. No, I hear you.
But drives your business. It's what grows. You can outsource everything, but you can't outsource marketing. And that's the one thing I always tell people, man, get good. If you can get good at anything, get good at that. You can outsource the others. You know how to do it, but you got to know marketing.
Yeah. And I think one of the cool things about your community is that like what you guys really understand is sales process. And like you get people who understand ads, but don't understand sales process and they're hosed. It's better to understand sales process than ads, because when you're getting started, you can outsource ads to an agency and see what they're doing and learn it. And you can go through some courses, but like, you can't outsource sales process, really. I mean, it's hard to do that well, to outsource sales process well. And I think that's one of the beautiful things that your tool offers, ClickFunnels, is – and granted, I've never used ClickFunnels or been in there really. Like, I don't know much about it, but like, dude, you guys are the most famous sales funnel builder in the world, at least in my world. I mean, I'm paying attention to the internet marketing world and the e-commerce world, and you're definitely the most famous. And like, the people that I talk to who are ClickFunnels users understand concepts that like – multi-hundred-million-dollar e-commerce retails that I talk to don't understand. And I'm like, whoa, you know, that's kind of mind-blowing, really, you know, that like you get these multi-hundred-million-dollar retailers who don't understand things like order bumps, upsells, bundles, cross-sells, long-form sales pages, conversion rate best practices, sales video structure. I mean, the stuff, like, it actually is, I think it's one of the reasons why you guys are successful as you are, because it's like, boy, that stuff is more important than almost anything else.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Well, as we get close to wrapping things up here, any other things you want to cover before we wrap it up?
I think if you're looking at 2018, the place to put your attention is video marketing. Video will drive, and people know this already, but I'm just going to reiterate it, that video will drive 80% of consumer-based content consumption by 2019, which means people who are going to purchase products are watching videos about those products and about what those products mean in the world. And I also think that if you're going to be retailing to anyone who is Gen Y or down, let's say anyone who's 40 or under, one of the things that you need to know that that market cares about is manufacturing process. So one of the things that the millennials have really brought – millennials have really brought this into the limelight. It's why companies like Everlane, Everlane.com, which is, by the way, my favorite e-commerce company from a marketing perspective. I just am in love with these people. I'm going to try to get them to come speak at my conference in August, actually. Companies like Buck Mason, they are speaking at my conference in August in Denver. But I think that one of the places to pay attention to is – video content that tells the story of who you are and why you are. Why are you making this product? What problem does it solve? And then how you're doing it. So manufacturing process transparency is a huge trend. And it also, what's fascinating about that, Dave, is manufacturing process transparency in and of itself is product differentiation, meaning you could have literally the exact same product as any other bum in the market. But if you are transparent about how you're making it and why you're making it the way you're making it and who's making it, you don't even need a USP on the product. Does that make sense?
Totally does.
That can be your totally USP.
Does. Yeah, I love
you're
that.
You're seeing this happen in the clothing industry. You're seeing it happen in the electronics industry. You're seeing it happen in the makeup industry. Companies are coming in and being like, look, here's how we're making the stuff we're making and why, and they're winning just on that. So I'd focused on video marketing as a strategy to adopt for your paid amplification. And by the way, just a little shameless plug here, I do happen to have what I consider to be the best course in the entire world on direct response Facebook video advertising. But that's neither here nor there.
Where would they get that? I have no problem pushing this
out. You go to smartmarketer.com, click on courses, and there's one called Facebook Video Ads Mastery. And I have a free 4-part series. If you go anywhere on smartmarketer.com, you'll notice I'm going to be trying to market you a free 4-part series on Facebook video ads, trying to get you to go through 4 videos, kind of like launch model style, 4 videos of content that like teach you about Facebook video ads that will give you value even if you don't buy my course. They're super good. And then it'll try to sell you my course, which is a way to go really in depth on that subject. But I think that's where you should focus your energy, and not selfishly, but just because that's where I'm focusing my energy and it's really working for me. I look at Purple Mattress. You guys know Purple.
Oh, yeah.
0 to 200 million in 2 years, no VC funding, all video marketing, all YouTube, Facebook video marketing, no retail. They're all direct response. Kind of beautiful. They're actually coming down to one of my events too. I love those guys. Then the other place I would focus is on product creation transparency. So like who you are, why you are, what you're doing, how you're doing it, and creating content in that area, because that area is extremely compelling at this particular time in history, and it will be for the next 10 years or so. We got about 5 to 10 year window where this is kind of the thing, and then what's going to happen is Gen Z, who are like these kids who are like, I'd say, I don't know what their age ranges are, but I want to say between 15 and 20 right now, or 13 and 20, whatever they find themselves interested in will sort of be directing what sort of ripples through the markets. But that's what I'd say.
You are just, again, if you guys are not following Ezra, I don't know why you wouldn't be. Please, please check him out, smartmarketer.com. We'll have links down below. Again, Ezra, you're such a dear friend. This is a man of massive integrity. What you see is what you get. He is the real deal. I can never say enough nice things about Ezra. In fact, I think that's the funnest thing about it is you will never find anybody anywhere who ever has anything negative to say about Ezra. It's just the greatest guy in the world.
Well, maybe Russell, who got me. Russell and I had a tussle in the kitchen at Pirate's Cove, and he I think he arm dragged to duck under, and he got me. And it was like, you know, we've been sort of like texting back and forth about one day we're gonna battle, we're gonna wrestle. You know, he was like a really high level college wrestler, and I was just like a bum high school wrestler. But I'm pretty dang good at jujitsu, which is like, you know, martial art where you are allowed submissions, and you're allowed to do strangleholds and arm bars and things like that. And we had this tussle in the kitchen at Pirate's Cove, and like it was on a concrete floor, so you could only go so far. But he beat me to the first he would have gotten a takedown. He got behind me and he would have been able to take me down, and then we would have had a scramble. But so we got some unfinished business there, Russell and I. Look forward to coming out to Idaho, coming out to Boise one of these times and getting a match in. Maybe we'll film it and put it on ClickFunnels.
Oh, we'd love it.
Yeah, but that'd be really fun. I actually injured my neck, so I'm out for a while. But anyways, I don't think Russell has bad things to say about me. I just think we have a little bit of unfinished competition.
Competition is a good thing. Ezra, thank you so much. Again, such a dear friend. Love having you on the show. Anything we can ever do for you, obviously we're here for you. So thanks so much, bud.
Thanks. Appreciate you having me on. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Funnel Hacker Radio Podcast. If you'd like to be notified anytime we release a new episode, just subscribe over at funnelhackerradio.com. In addition to that, we'd love to send you a free gift. You can find that free gift at funnelhackerradio.com/free trial. One last thing is we love giving away cars. So if you'd like access to a free dream car, all you have to do is go to funnelhackerradio.com/dream car and you'll get all the details. Thanks again for listening.